This week on Making Contact.
If farm workers are having this type of exposure, even with the federally mandated personal protective equipment, the best way we're going to protect workers is getting rid of these chemicals altogether.
Farm workers are vital to the production of food in the United States. Without their labor, our lives and our national economy would be very different. Yet American farm workers are often undervalued and marginalized. On this edition, we'll hear from speakers working on behalf of farm workers in the U.S. today. Eric Nicholson of United Farm Workers of America, Tirso Moreno of Farm Workers Association of Florida, and we'll hear from some of the farm workers themselves. I'm Tina Rubio, your host this week on Making Contact, a program creating connections between people, vital ideas, and important information. The United States Department of Labor lists agriculture as the second most dangerous occupation in the U.S. And although farm workers have one of the highest rates of chemical-related illnesses among workers in the nation, there is often little or no enforcement of the health and safety laws enacted to protect them. United Farm Workers Director Eric Nicholson spoke at the National Network of Grantmakers Conference near Seattle, Washington, last October. Nicholson is the UFW's Pacific Northwest Regional Director. He's worked with the organization for the past 15 years. Nicholson spoke about the risks of pesticide exposure to farm workers in his home state of Washington and about the ongoing battle between industry and farmers.
I want to start by just laying out a framework about how we look at pesticides in the United Farm Workers, and I think a very important conceptual context that we say that by protecting farm workers, you protect the environment and you protect consumers. But all too often in the 15 years that I've been doing this, our struggles have not been united, and all too frequently, frankly, across purposes, where we see consumer organizations fighting to protect the environment and ignoring our community. We've seen environmental community trying to reduce pesticide use, but ignoring the farm worker community. And as representative farm worker community, we don't have that luxury, that privilege to separate out consumer issues from environmental issues, from issues that face farm workers where they live and where they work. So what I want to talk about briefly about is the context in which we find ourselves here in this region, and a little bit of work we've been doing, and some of the struggles we've had, both with consumer organizations and what I call the white environmental organizations. Here in the state of Washington, it's a huge agricultural producing area. We have a lot of raspberries up here in this immediate area. If you go east, huge apple growing, cherries, wine grapes. The wine we represent produces 4 million cases of wine a year, which, to give you an idea, is more than the entire production of Oregon put together. Hops, it's a very rich agricultural area, yet you'll find some amazing poverty and pretty devastating health effects amongst the farm worker population, who are the working poor that are employed in this industry. Here in Washington, Mexican immigrants are dying and are being killed in workplace fatalities 4 times more than non-Mexican workers. Now that's of all industries. In agriculture, it's the numbers twice as many. The injury rate's 25% higher in agriculture than in non-ag, and 35% higher when you get into orchard crops such as apples or cherries. Yet the response we see from the regulatory agencies is pretty much ignorance or silence, and no increased diligence or enforcement to protect our community from workplace fatalities and or injuries. And those workers who suffered losses of loved ones or devastating injuries have very little recourse or support that they get from state, federal, or even social agencies. So you see the human cost on a daily basis out in the fields and in the agricultural communities. At the same time, I think it's important when we look at the issue of pesticides as a labor activist, we look at it from a labor point of view. And I want to talk briefly about the issue of fear, because fear is very, very real, not only for farm workers, but for compliance officers, for doctors, when we look at the issue of pesticides, starting from workers. Many workers have no idea what they're being exposed to. And it has been made very clear to them, if they ask or somehow try to investigate, they risk being fired and possibly being evicted from grower-owned housing. You take that to the next level. Last year, we had an inspector with the Washington Department of Agriculture, a guy named David Zamora, who in our experience was one of the few guys who was actually out there trying to do a good job enforcing pesticide rules. Well, he did a little bit too good of a job. He pissed off some large growers like Stamilt, They called their political representatives who mobilized against him. And in an article that we actually get in the front page of the Seattle Times documented how David was pulled from his enforcement duties and put to a desk job. And he was not allowed to talk publicly to the press because he was aggressively out there enforcing these regs. And one of the things, two things he did that angered the industry. When his kids at a daycare were drifted upon, and not only his kids, but all the kids at the daycare, he complained. And he pushed the state to doing some enforcement action. That got the wrath of the industry. And the second thing is when I believe it was an industry newspaper published a picture of pesticide application, he pointed out that there were multiple violations present in the picture that should, and that these guys weren't even complying with the regs in their own promotional materials. That incurred the wrath. So David's still there in the WSDA, but he's not out in the fields protecting farm workers. And believe me, that message has not been lost on the other states' enforcement compliance officers, much less in the region in Oregon. I've talked to people who are aware of David's case. So subsequently, when you look at the reporting data, from our perspective, there's a huge underreporting of pesticide poisonings and exposure to workers out of fear. That's the context when we find ourselves. And we've got to do something about it. So what we started to do, my predecessor, about 16 years ago, is try to get Washington caught up to the 1970s in California. And in California, because of that political action and the organization of the UFW in that state, implemented a very simple medical monitoring test for mixture loaders and applicators. There's a whole class of pesticides that are based on nerve gas technology. They work by shutting down the nervous system. And the enzyme that's used to communicate from one nerve to another is called cholinesterase. So by taking a blood test prior to exposure, you get a relative baseline for each individual of what their cholinesterase levels are. And then as they have exposure, you do subsequent blood tests and you monitor the degree to which that enzyme is being suppressed. These type of pesticides don't distinguish between a fly and a human being. These pesticides can be fatal to both. And so in California, we've had this for 30 years. It's the only state in the country that has it. The federal government has repeatedly refused to implement such a program. So 16 years ago, the United Farm Workers, together with Legal Services, petitioned the state of Washington, said, it's working in California. We need something here as well. We're using a lot of these pesticides. You need to do something about it. State said no. Bunch of legal action pursued. So after 16 years, Washington State Supreme Court ruled, said absolutely this should be done, and mandated that the state of Washington implement rulemaking to begin cholinesterase testing. That happened, and the industry's response was immediate. They went straight to the legislature to try to undermine the rulemaking, brought in their hack scientists, frankly, that said it was unneeded, unwarranted, farm workers are perfectly protected, look at the low reporting data to the state agency, completely unnecessary waste of money. And we had to mobilize. And when I say we, it was a pretty short list of who we were fighting for this rule. It was the labor community, it was us, and legal services. The white environmental community was completely absent. It was very disappointing. And we fought them off. And we fought them off in the next legislative session as they tried to undermine it again. And finally, last year, for the first time, we had this medical monitoring rule in place, up and running. And guess what? One out of five workers who were tested had actionable depression levels. And according to the EPA, if you talk to and believe their propaganda, what they say about farm workers being protected, there should have been zero farm workers with depressions of their cholinesterase. One in five. Over 100 workers had to be pulled from their jobs because they were facing dangerous levels of exposure. Now, this is something we can see in the blood. What has yet to be determined is what are the long-term impacts of this type of exposure. There's been increasing data. It can affect the nervous system on a long-term basis, ability to differentiate colors, mental capacity. But in many cases, farm workers continue to be the guinea pigs for the industry. We have well-intentioned scientists out there studying our community. All the while, farm workers are being exposed to these dangerous pesticides. So after our victory and looking at how we had really shut down the industry and their response to the cholinesterase rule, we knew that we were going to face some type of attack in the upcoming legislative session earlier this year. And so we started to talk, well, maybe we should push for additional protection like gloves or better respirators. And then we just took a step back and said, this is ridiculous. If farm workers are having this type of exposure, even with the federally mandated personal protective equipment, the best way we're going to protect workers is getting rid of these chemicals altogether. So we introduced a bill in the legislature earlier this year calling for a phase out of these most toxic chemicals. And boy, did that get the industry's attention. All of a sudden, you had these same scientists who previously were saying this coal and esterase rule was unwarranted, it was unneeded, saying this phase out's completely unneeded because look at this great medical monitoring program we have. It's protecting farm workers, and we've got them on record, and we achieved our goal, which was defending this rule. We knew when we introduced this bill that we weren't going to get it. But what we succeeded in doing was reframing the whole discussion. No longer was it how much coal and esterase depression is allowable. It's about what it's going to take to protect farm workers.
That was UFW's director, Eric Nicholson, speaking at the National Network of Grantmakers Conference. We'll have more in a few moments. You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. If you'd like more information or for a CD copy of this program, please call 800-529-5736. You can also download programs or get our podcast at radioproject.org. Tirso Moreno is the founder and executive director of the Farm Workers Association of Florida. A former farm worker himself, Moreno has dedicated his life to improving the working and living conditions of all farm workers for the past 23 years. Moreno, speaking at the National Network of Grantmakers Conference, talked about the brutal conditions farm workers frequently work under in Florida and about the recent collaborations between local activist groups and farmers.
Florida is next to California the biggest in terms of numbers of farm workers. They're not exact numbers, but there must be about 300,000 farm workers in Florida. Farm workers are majority Latinos, as is in most of the states and the nation. As well as in Florida, we have a percentage of Haitians, and still have farm workers, African Americans. The vast majority, as you all probably know, are undocumented workers, especially Latinos are mostly undocumented, that make them more vulnerable and make harder their struggle to, you know, protect themselves and for us to protect them. And we have, in Florida, we have the biggest number of workers work on food production, different kinds of fruits and vegetables, as well as we have a very large number of workers working on the ornamental industry. Plants and ferns are very large. Farm workers are not only men, but are men, they're women, and they're children. Especially the ornamental industry have a lot of majority of women. They must have over 100,000 workers now. Farm workers are relatively young in their 20s. A lot of them are at the age of having family. Many of the women and men are exposed. Women are exposed while they are pregnant. That make them more vulnerable. Of course, the children, you have to know that are more vulnerable to pesticides. A lot of the workers are teenagers because they're undocumented. The companies defend themselves by saying that well, they showed me papers that they were older than what they are. Some of the common health problems caused by pesticide exposure are skin problems, skin rashes, or they have problems, respiratory problems while they're working, vomiting, diarrhea are very, very common. And of course, our community have other kinds of problems that are heavier, like, you know, as I was saying, the women who work during the pregnancy do have miscarriages. We had some incidents were in some of the workplaces, there were miscarriages, you know, like a whole workplace, women had miscarriages, at the same time. So those are some long-term effects of the pesticides. I mean, our communities, we're doing some research with the Lake Apopka workers, we call the community, and the results of that community-based research we're doing, we have high incidence of asthma, lupus, cancer, you know, and communities, we're discovering that there are people have higher percentage of those kinds of health problems. The reasons why the farm workers are still being exposed are simple but very important. There's not enough, it's not appropriate training for farm workers. We have a lack of enough, adequate regulations to protect the workers. We have a lack of compliance with the law. Even though we have some regulations, the employers do not comply with the laws. We have a lack of enforcement. The agencies in charge of enforcing the law do not do what they're supposed to do. When they do their job, they get fired. They don't get fired because they don't do their job, but because they do their job. Another big problem we have is not enough research on the connection between the pesticide exposure and the health problems in the communities. Our programs are focused on dealing with these problems. Of course, there are other problems that are indirectly barriers to get, protection for the workers. The exemption of the farm workers from the right to organize is the problem. They're not covered by that. The big growers' political power. Agriculture is not longer the first industry or the biggest one in Florida, but it's the second one. Their condition as undocumented of the workers, it's another barrier. It's very hard to, for them to defend themselves. And of course, the mobility of the workers, it's another barrier. Our organization has been working on the issues, and we got some very important accomplishments, especially in the last couple of seasons. We have been educating the public and, of course, the politicians to change the policies in Florida. We had been able to get a change on the laws, and we passed last year what was named Alfredo Baena Act that gives the workers better protections than the federal law. We also have done a major campaign of trainings and documenting violations of the regulations. As a result of that, the Department of Health, as well as the Department of Agriculture, has done some investigations. They recognize that they don't have the capacity to really do proper enforcement. We put 135 complaints. They came back to us and say they were 6 months behind, and that was work for 2 years for them. So they're not capable of enforcing the law. They complained that they didn't have enough resources. Last year also, we had a very important focus of the media and uncover a lot of the media attention and cover a lot of things related to the lack of protection for the farm workers. And the combination with all the work we've done in the last couple of seasons has brought us a lot of more collaboration. We got offers of collaboration from the University of Miami, the School of Law, and the School of Medicine to help us to investigate more the connection between the pesticide exposure and the health problems of the farm workers. That has been a big problem till now because the doctors, as Eric say, are afraid of, saying that there's a connection. The School of Law is going to put volunteers with us to do more work to get enforcement of the laws. We got the collaboration of the legal services. We got the collaboration of the community health centers to do work in educating the health providers. Health providers are not helping us to identify the health problems. But we got this year, because of the pressure, more collaboration, which we're gonna use. Well, we need to focus on research, because that has been a barrier to really, deal with the problems. Of course, we're gonna keep on working on the collaboration, but we need to work more on the collaboration of the consumers and the public.
That was Tirso Moreno, Farm Workers Association of Florida Executive Director. The New Jersey-based organization, Farm Workers Health and Safety Institute, works on developing innovative training programs around health and safety issues for farm workers. One of their recent projects, an educational DVD called Pesticides: From the Fields to Your Table. Here we excerpt from the farm workers themselves talking about the dangerous conditions under which they work and live.
Pesticides will always be there. Where there are plants, pesticides will always be there.
We're finding people that are having problems breathing. They have problems with rashes and headaches. Their eyes are red from being exposed to pesticides. I personally was poisoned by pesticides. I was spraying potatoes. I began to feel dizzy, to vomit. I lost my eyesight. I didn't know what it was. I started to react 5 hours after exposure. After that, I went to the doctor.
There are many people who work their whole life in the farms, from when they arrive at 15 or 16 years old. Every day, every year, they're in the farm. Contact with pesticides is limited, but over time, illnesses accumulate.
Many people get rashes and red spots on their skin. Various people are allergic to the chemicals. They don't tell the farmer or the owner so that they don't lose their job.
The people sometimes become afraid that the owner can throw them out into the street, because when one has just arrived, it's difficult to forge a path alone without transportation to another work camp, and without communication to another camp to know when there is work. And so you have the fear that if they fire me here, where will I go?
The majority of camps in New Jersey are very close to the fields, so the pesticides land directly on the house, very near the house, or in the yard, and the workers are there during the hours they are not working.
I live next to a field. A tractor sprays, and with the windows open, the wind carries the pesticides inside through the open window or onto your clothes that are hanging outside. When you put your clothes on, there are pesticides on them that can cause harm to your skin. When they come through the window, the smell becomes trapped inside, which can make you sick. I don't know the pesticides or how dangerous they are. One never knows. Only they know what they're spraying.
Uno no sabe, solamente ellos saben lo que le echan.
La gente compra sus frutas y vegetales.
People buy their fruits and vegetables in the supermarket, and they don't realize what farm workers face in the fields, nor the conditions they have.
One, as a worker, can't go to the supermarket and say to someone, "I packaged this before it left the farm. It might be contaminated. Wash it before you eat it." There are many people who will grab it right there at the market and eat it. I hope that the American public realizes what immigrant workers suffer, to harvest a product that they receive daily on their table. If they knew what happened to the workers and knew their suffering, I think they would understand us and say that immigrant workers deserve to have an opportunity.
Those were the voices of farm workers from the DVD, Pesticides, From the Fields to Your Table. Now we'd like to leave you with a song called El Picket Sign. It's written and performed by a San Francisco, California-based group called Dr. Loco's Rockin' Jalapeno Band. They've been called one of the most innovative Chicano roots world music bands and are committed to singing about issues relevant to the Chicano Latino culture and history.
We are important because of the work we do. We are human beings whose sweat and sacrifice brings food to the tables of millions and millions of people across America and around the world.
Please don't feed your children poison. Love them enough to boycott the grapes.
On my children and my children's children, I pray that everyone in here understand that we can start to make a difference if we send a message home, a strong message home, to the growers of this community and of this country, that we have to find a way to regulate the pesticides in this country. And the best way to do that is to boycott grapes at the present time. Start with one product and go from there. And I urge everyone to boycott grapes at this present time in the United States of America.
That's it for this edition of Making Contact. Special thanks to Dan Turner, Ronald Rucker, Yasuyu Nagata, Tahij Edwards, Steve Macer, and Jamie Lee Evans. Our theme music is by the Charlie Hunter Trio. Making Contact is an independent production, funded primarily by generous gifts from people in the community. We are committed to providing a unique forum for voices and opinions not often heard in the mass media. If you'd like to support our work, or if you have ideas for future programs, we'd love to hear from you. For a CD copy of program number 0406, call the National Radio Project at 800-529-5736. You can also visit our website at radioproject.org. Lisa Rudman is our executive director, Justin Beck, producer, Dorian Taylor, communications manager, Esther Mania, outreach coordinator, Tom Evans, development associate, and Emily Polk, production fellow. I'm Tina Rubio. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.